Jasodana Jamuna Tiramanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Parivrajakacharya Shutra Shutra Shishi Marizavan Grace Esi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Raja Granta Shima Bhagavatam Ki Samveda Bhakti Vrindiki Nitai Go Primanandi Hare Krishna Om Akyant Mirandasya Ginajana Shalakaya Chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupakadamayam nadati swapadantikam vancha kalpaturubhyascha kripa sindhu merevacha patitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadarha Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 7, Text Number 7. I'm just going to do the word-to-word meaning. Is that okay? And then the translation purport. So word-to-word meaning. Evam, thus, karma vishuddhya, by offering everything for the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And not desiring any results of his pious activities. Vishuddha sattvasya of Bharata Maharaj, whose existence was completely purified. Anta hridaya akasha sharire, the super soul within the heart, as meditated on by yogis. Brahmani, into impersonal Brahman, which is worshipped by impersonalist Gyanis. Bhagavati, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vasudeve, the son of Vasudev, Lord Krishna, Mahapurusha, of the Supreme Person, Rupa, of the form, Upalakshane, having the symptoms, Sri Vatsa, the mark on the chest of the Lord, Kostubha, the Kostubha gem, used by the Lord, Vanamala, flower garland, Aridhara, by the disc and conch shell, Gadha Adibihi, by the club and other symbols, Upalakshite, being recognized, Nijapurusha Hrit Likitena, which is situated in the heart of his own devotee, like an engraved picture. Atmani, in his own mind, Purusha Rupena, by his personal form, Virochamane, shining, Uchchaistaram, on a very high level, bhakti, devotional service, anudinam, day after day, edamana, increasing, raya, possessing force, ajayata, appeared. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, in this way, being purified by ritualistic sacrifices, the heart of Maharaj Bharata was completely uncontaminated. His devotional service unto Vasudev, Lord Krishna, increased day after day. Lord Krishna, the son of Vasudev, is the original personality of Godhead, manifest as a super soul, Paramatma, as well as the impersonal Brahman. Yogis meditate upon the localized Paramatma situated in the heart. Gyanis worship the impersonal Brahman as the supreme absolute truth. And devotees worship Vasudeva, the supreme personality of Godhead, whose transcendental body is described in the Shastras. His body is decorated with the Sri Vatsa, the Kostubha jewel, and a flower garland, shell, disc, club, and lotus flower. Devotees like Narada always think of him within their hearts. Purport. Lord Vasudev, or Sri Krishna, the son of Vasudev, is the supreme personality of Godhead. He is manifest within the heart of yogis and his Paramatma feature, and he is worshipped as impersonal Brahman by Gyanis. The Paramatma feature is described in the Shastras as having four hands, holding disc, conch shell, lotus flower, and club. As confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, eighth verse, Kechit Swadehanta Hridaya Vakashe Pradesha Matram Purusham Vasantam Chatur Bhujam Kanja Ratanga Shanka Gadhadharam Dharanaya Smaranti. Paramatma is situated in the hearts of all living beings. He has four hands, which hold four symbolic weapons. All devotees who think of the Paramatma within the heart worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the temple deity. They also understand the impersonal features of the Lord and his bodily rays, the Brahman effulgence. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. So in the first line, the word is mentioned, karma vishuddhya, vishuddha sattvasya. So it's kind of describing the beginning of the self-realization process. The beginning of the self-realization process is called karma yoga. And the idea of karma yoga is that conditioned souls, we're contaminated by the modes of material nature. And so we can't immediately come to very high levels of spiritual practice. The context in the Bhagavad Gita is Arjuna wants to go immediately to the forest. So Krishna speaks chapter 3 to say, that's nice ideal, but there's a gap between the ideal and the actual reality. The actual reality is that you're contaminated by the modes of material nature. Arjuna is not contaminated by the modes of material nature, but Krishna's aiming his instructions at Arjuna for the benefit of all conditioned souls, for their protection. Mahaprabhu says that in Sanatana Shiksha. So many times, spiritual life means the ideal, right? And then there's the reality. And oftentimes we notice that there's a gap between the ideal and the reality. And the bigger the gap, the further the frustration in spiritual life, isn't it? You may have experienced this. When we want to live to a certain ideal, according to spiritual principles, but then there's the reality of our situation, which, especially born in the West, the reality is very bleak. near hopelessness. You know, which Srila Prabhupada accomplished, no one can conceive of. So then, when we first come to Krishna consciousness, we think we can achieve the ideal very quickly. So then we become enthusiastic. And then as we are trying to practice more and more and more, we start to realize that the reality and the ideal is very far apart. And the more we get that realization, the more frustrated we become. And then you get ideas like, oh, maybe the spiritual life doesn't work. One starts to lose faith, one starts to lose enthusiasm. And it will become manifest in his endeavor to attain Krishna or to practice spiritual life. When we first come, because we're suffering from utsahamayi. Utsahamayi means false enthusiasm. So we hear about pure devotional service, and we hear about the pure devotee, and we feel that we can achieve that very quickly. And we're go-getters, especially born in the Western world, we're go-getters. And then as we're practicing, we see that, oh, I'm not achieving it very quickly as I thought. And then more than that, you start to realize how far away you are from the ideal. It gets very frustrating. So Krishna is understanding this point. Arjuna wants to go to the forest, which is for persons who have realized themselves to be different from the body, gan, atma gan. So Krishna is saying that's a nice ideal, but the reality is that you're contaminated by material association. You're contaminated by material association, so you will not be able to achieve that ideal right away. You have to purify yourself. So the method that he prescribes is called karma yoga, there in chapter 3. So in the karma yoga process, one works with his material conditioning. The idea is like using one thorn to take out another thorn. Sometimes you step on a splinter or a thorn, and in order to get out that splinter, you use another thorn to do that. And then after you get out that one thorn, you throw both of them away. So it's something like that, that you use your conditioned nature to become free. And the way one does that is by offering prescribed activities. Prescribed activities means the activities prescribed by the scriptures, which are coming from the Supreme Lord's breathing, Narayana.
And when one follows those prescribed duties, karma vishuddhya, it's translated here as offering everything for the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and not desiring any results in return. Then gradually one becomes purified. And usually these prescribed duties may be aimed at, even at certain devatas in the culture. So you would see that many of the kings, including Bharata Maharaj, they would also perform these prescribed duties. Even though they were highly exalted personalities, they would also perform these prescribed duties for purification. Not so much for their own purification, but especially for setting up example for those who weren't on that platform. So you hear Krishna speaks about this also in chapter 3 when he talks about Janak Maharaj. Janak Maharaj was the father of Sita Devi, and he was a liberated soul. As you can imagine, to be the father of Sita Devi, you can't be a fool and rascal and be the father of Sita Devi. So he was already a liberated personality. But he used to also perform these prescribed yajnas, which are meant for neophytes in spiritual life, the lowest level of spiritual practitioners. Even though he was on such an exalted platform, liberated soul, he would also perform. So Krishna mentions this in Gita, that even if you're atmareti, for atmareti means self-satisfied, then there is no duty to perform because you have achieved the result of duty. The result of duty is self-satisfaction. And when one is self-satisfied, there is nothing to do anymore in terms of activity. The only reason we have dharma is because we need to have our energies regulated. Otherwise, we get into trouble, isn't it? If we don't have now we don't have prescribed duties, but people need things like jobs and so on. You can see this is a sad reality, but if you go to some of the more disenfranchised areas of any city, including Chicago, where you see the ghetto people, that's my term, persons who are not so well off, many of them don't work. They get what they call government money, like a link card and, welfare checks, and they don't do any work. So you also know in those neighborhoods, there's so much nonsense things going on because their energy is not regulated. So then when that energy is not regulated, it becomes destructive. So Krishna gives the principles of dharma so that our energies can be regulated in a constructive way for gradual advancement in spiritual life. That's called dharma. But when you achieve self-satisfaction, there's nothing for you to do. So Krishna says, yes, that is true. For those who are atmareti, there's nothing for them to do. But even those persons, they also do these duties for those who are less advanced. So Bharata Maharaj is also a very advanced personality in devotional service. Therefore, earlier in Rishabhdev's teachings, Rishabhdev advised his sons to worship Bharata. He wouldn't advise his sons to worship someone who was not fit, spiritually fit. And yet, he also was performing these activities meant for neophyte persons for setting up that example. And by doing that, one's existence becomes purified. One becomes free from contamination. Karma vishuddha, vishuddha sattvasya. So he became completely purified by those activities. It's mentioned here. And then the next thing that Prabhupada translates, it's mentioned in the verse also at the end though. Bhakti anudinam edamana raya ajayata. So that means that day by day, he increased his bhakti. So this is a very important point, that spiritual life is not about becoming freed from anarthas. Spiritual life, the goal of spiritual life is not to become free from sins. In a lot of our traditions growing up, that was like our whole consciousness was on sins. You're sinful. There's no way for you to get out of sin and therefore go on sinning. Generally, that's the conclusion that people come to. Anyway, well, since I can't anyway stop, then why bother trying, right? Even though Jesus says, sin no more, when he was, to many persons he told like that. Mahaprabhu told the same thing to Jagan Madai, that after he liberated them, he told them, sin no more. Jesus gave the same instruction. But now they teach that anyway, you cannot stop sinning. So therefore, don't bother trying. Just feel confident that Jesus died for you or something like that. So then our whole consciousness is on this sin. Then there was the original sin idea. So everyone is born sinful, thanks to some people generations ago. We all get the benefit of that they're sinful activity. And it's a very, you feel very much oppressed spiritually. more or less hopeless. And so people actually don't even try. But actually, devotional service is susukam. It is supposed to be joyfully performed. You know, Prabhupada says in the purport, I always like to mention this point, Prabhupada says it can be joyfully performed. So there's a little edit there. Krishna says it is joyfully performed. Prabhupada says twice in the purport, you can go and read it, it can be joyfully performed. So then that tends to imply that it may not be joyfully performed. And the reason that may happen is because of our particular focus. The reason that may have is our particular focus. Oftentimes we become so zoomed in on our sinful nature, our anarthas, that we find devotional service process practically unbearable. And that's just due to our being focused on the negative instead of focused on the positive application of increasing our bhakti day by day, as Bharat Maharaj has done. That's the positive application. Increase your, just like Srila Prabhupada has given this example, that if you have a cup full of ink and you try to pour out the ink and clean it, then it is a very hard task. Prabhupada has given this example. But if you pour something in that cup of greater density, then it replaces the ink and purifies the whole cup of the inky stains. Right? So then I think the example probably is of milk, because milk is of greater density. So when you add the milk, then all the ink comes out gradually and then becomes completely pure by continued adding of milk. Prabhupada gives this particular example. So this is the positive application of Krishna consciousness. The negative application is try to free myself of all that inky anarthas. And then you'll find it more ink and more ink and more ink. Prabhupada said it's like cleaning coal, is it? If you take some coal and you try to clean it, what do you get? You get more coal. And then after some point, you become dejected. There is no hope. And then you stop the cleaning process. So that is like that. That is negative application of Krishna consciousness. Positive application is add greater density. Increase our devotion to Krishna day by day. This is the method of actually purifying the soul. Krishna says in the Bhagavatam, I used to quote this verse a lot last year, yata yatatma pramigyate so mapunya gata shavana bidhanai tata tata pashyati vastu shukshman yatayajana, I forget the last line. Huh? Anjana means eyes, right? Yata something, samprayuktam. Anjana samprayuktam. Chakshur yata vanjana samprayuktam. Chakshur means to see, right? Chakshur means to see. Eyes. And anjana means easy. Ointment. Ah, ointment, right, okay. Chakshur yata vanjana samprayuktam. Okay, I worked it out. So Krishna gives his example. He says, yata yata atma pramigyate so. So he says, to the degree that the Atma is purified, to the degree that Atma's consciousness is pure, Atma Paramigyate, so means, to the degree that Atma's consciousness is purified, by what process? By what sadhana? Ma punya gata shravana abhidhanai, by the positive process of increasing hearing and chanting. Then tata tata, to that degree, paschati vastu shukshman, that soul will be able to perceive the subtle nature of spiritual existence. And then an example is given, chakshur yata anjana samprayuktam. Just like when you add ointment to a diseased eye, then that eye gradually recovers its ability to see. So Krishna mentions this same point as being mentioned here in this verse, that to the degree you augment devotional service, to that degree the soul will actually become purified. It's a different type of psychology than just trying to remove the negativity from my life, but it's a positive process of increasing the positive points in our application. Then to that degree, Krishna says, your heart will become purified and you will see the spiritual truth. So this is the positive application. If our hearts become zoomed in on lamentation due to our obviously hopeless situation, it's obviously hopeless, right? It's obviously hopeless. In fact, therefore, no one came to America because it was hopeless. I think even Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur's disciples, after they came back, they said, there is no hope. There's no hope for these people. I mean, it's clear. It's self-evident. Just like the material, it's self-evident. So it's self-evident you can't do anything for these people. at least apparently so. So we tend to think like that also. We get so, it's self-evident that I'm not going to be able to improve. When the heart is captured by lamentation, then the jiva takes shelter of sense gratification, either in the form of grieving, incessantly grieving, or then practically doing other forms of sense gratification, maybe eating ice cream and watching 12 hours of television. You know, that's a television example. Anyway, so therefore, one of the regular principles of devotional service is don't allow the heart to become captured by lamentation. A good example of this to inspire us is Narada Muni's life. If you see Narada Muni's life, it's actually a tale of woe, his life before becoming Narada Muni. Because he meets the sages, and he spends 4 months with them, and he becomes completely attached to the sages. He expresses his own attachment to them. And he also expresses his own love for the sages. So when after the passing of the Chaturmasya, Narada was wanting to travel with the sages, but he thought, who will take care of my mother? No one is there. This sounds like, this is an eternal problem, huh? For Indians at least. Americans don't have this type of thinking so much. Somehow my mother will be taken care of. Haribo, surrender to Krishna. Anyway, and Indians, you see their minds usually go, who will take care of my mom? Who will take care of my dad? So Narada Muni was thinking like that. So he didn't travel with the sages because he wanted to be responsible. And then shortly after the sages leave, the reason for which he stayed back, that also disappeared from his life. His mother was killed by snake bite. So that's very lamentable in one sense, because I didn't travel with the sages to take care of my mother. Now she's dead. And I missed my opportunity to travel with the sages. So that's lamentable. But he saw, somehow other was able to see that as the mercy of the Lord. So he continued to deeply practice his spiritual life. He had to really deepen his process of hearing, isn't it? Whatever he had acquired from the sages, he kept deep within his heart. And he allowed those vibrations to guide the rest of his life. So he was traveling here and there. And finally, he makes it to the forest, and he's performing the devotional austerities as taught to him by the sages. And he sees the Supreme Lord, Vishnu. That's pretty good. That's very auspicious. But then shortly after seeing the Supreme Lord Vishnu, he immediately disappears from the scene. And Narada Muni becomes bewildered, so he tries the same processes again, and the Lord is not appearing. Because the Lord does not depend on our mechanical application of some process. Srila Prabhupada teaches in chapter 7 of the first canto, Krishna does not even depend on how much hearing and chanting we're doing. That is just to help us move forward in the process of devotional service. And I've been recently thinking about it. It's to help us keep us out of trouble. But Krishna ultimately has to bestow his mercy upon a living. He's not obliged to reveal himself by any amount of endeavor. Although he is pleased to see the endeavor because he knows that you're serious about getting his mercy. So then the Lord disappears. That is lamentable. And then Krishna again appears as a Akashvani, a sky voice. And he tells Narada Muni, you'll not be able to see me for the rest of this life. That's lamentable. Narada Muni had many things to lament in his life. And Krishna says, because unless you're completely free from all material taint, you can hardly see me. So you have to continue to live your life according to the principles of devotional service. And then certainly you'll see me in the end. So Narada Muni did just that. He applied the instructions of the Supreme Lord rather than allow his heart to become captured by lamentation. And as a result, he was able to finally achieve that mercy of the Supreme Lord. But it would have been easy for him to become absorbed in the lamentable history thus far, up until that point. Another example may be, it's just coming to me now, is in the first canto also, Arjuna lamenting the disappearance of Krishna. So when he goes to Yudhishthira Maharaj, he looks like a ghost. And Yudhishthira Maharaj is quite, why are you looking like this? So in 14th chapter, it's a series of questions. Yudhishthira Maharaj is trying to figure out what is causing the lamentation. And the reason the lamentation is there is because Krishna has disappeared from the planet. So Arjuna is feeling the acute separation from Krishna. So then in the 15th chapter, he begins remembering all the pastimes of Krishna. Kind of like a gratitude journal, because a lot of the pastimes were in relationship to how Krishna showed mercy upon him, how he was able to defeat this demon, how he was able to cross this obstacle, and so on. And he was lamenting and lamenting and lamenting, and as he went through his meditation, he finally came to the instructions of Bhagavad Gita. And when he remembered the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, it is mentioned that all I forget the exact word that was used, but the pain in his heart from separation from Krishna was immediately placated. And then Sutta Goswami, when commenting on this, discussed how by that remembrance, all the contaminations in his heart disappeared, and he was able to realize that he was actually not separated from the Lord, and so on. So these are a couple of examples. They were both lamenting, but then when they were able to remember the Supreme Lord and remember particularly the instructions of the sages in Narada's case, or of Krishna in Arjuna's case, then immediately they were able to pull themselves out of that dangerous situation and pursue Krishna, and then ultimately get Krishna. So one has to see how their devotion is increasing day by day, not how our narchas are increasing day by day. That would be obviously a very depressing affair. Krishna mentions in Uddhava Gita also, Jata Shadama Katasu Nirvina Savakarmasu Veda Dukatmakam Kamam Prityage Hinishara Tato Bhajita Mampita Shradaya Jirtanishchaya. He mentions that, talking about the neophyte devotee, that he has awakened faith in my glories. He knows he's disgusted with material sense gratification, at least to a large degree. Therefore, he started to practice a devotional service. And he is knows that all material life leads to misery. He knows this reality. And he's also trying to abandon his attachment to it, but still he cannot give up all his attachments. Anishwara, because he's not in control. He's, due to many lifetimes of trying to be God, it doesn't just cease like that. So oftentimes we're forced by our material nature, acquired material nature, to do things that is not congenial to spiritual life. And then we become dejected. Especially if you're doing really good. Sometimes you're doing really good for a period of 1 month. You know, not even a long time, but for us, that's pretty good. You know, usually it's like every other day. It's like a dream or an anarto or an offense comes out and we become, you know, this. But sometimes you do really good. You feel like you're on a roll for a whole month. You feel like I'm running to pure devotion. You know, I'm almost there. I'm close. And then you have a dream or an anarto comes out. You commit some offense. And then you feel, what is the use of it? And you go opposite extremes. This tendency is like this. So Krishna says that the neophyte is not in control. So he advises that my devotees should remain happy. My devotees should remain happy and continue to endeavor with faith and determination. Shradaya drita nishchaya dushamana shtatam kaman. And although he is sometimes engaged in sense gratification on account of being forced by material nature, he sincerely repents that and he moves on with his life. Not that dwelling, this is a mode of ignorance. When some anarcha happens, you just sit there and think about it. One devotee asked me like that, Prabhu, you know, I'm having a dream. I was kind of trying to understand why this is happening to me and so on. I said, don't worry about it. Don't go back and think about it. Definitely not. You know, increase the contamination. Why did I break the regulative principles of my dream? I mean, I could have, you know, why did I, like that, and you go on thinking about it, then it drags the consciousness down. There was some mistake made, now it's time to move on with life. Actually, in the eternal time continuum, what is one little dream or one little fall down? Or even one little, even a fall down, a major fall down. In the eternal time continuum, what is a real loss if one continues to charge forward towards Krishna? We have to have confidence that Krishna is going to protect us. Kondaya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashati. So when Bharata Maharaj took birth as a deer, that could have been very depressing. Imagine, Krishna says, Neham Bikrama Nashosti, right? And all the devotees were very confident. I've taken prasadam, therefore definitely human life is guaranteed. All right, we always hear that, isn't it? And we felt very confident. We could just walk around, strolling about. Even if I don't make it back to God, at least I'm going to get a human birth. Confidently we're thinking like that. Imagine you took birth as a deer. It'd be, or a cockroach or something. A cockroach is, you know, that's really, very heavy. As a deer. And he had his sage consciousness in a deer body. It'd be one thing you take birth as a deer with deer consciousness. Then you're okay. You know, you don't know what's going on. But he took birth as a deer with sage consciousness. That could be very frustrating. Very frustrating situation. And then immediately the mind will be going, what happened to Neha Brikama Nashosti, Konta Yarpati Jani He? All these verses Krishna gave guarantee. And Prabhupada said, if you take prasada, immediately you might start finding fault with the acharyas. The Mahajans didn't know what was up. Of course, it would never occur to you that I have my that same consciousness in dear body. How that's been, that part you'll tend to skip over. And all you'll see is that, what happened to all those verses I read? I was confident I was getting human body. But immediately, Bharat Maharaj took advantage of his opportunity. Because by having that body with the same consciousness, he was able to understand his folly and become completely detached from all material affairs. So much so that in his next birth as Jatabharata, he took birth as a Paramahamsa. You could say this is like a classical failure as a stepping stone to success type of story in that sense. Although it appeared to be a failure, he was able to take advantage of that to augment his devotional service. So also in our own endeavors to attain Krishna, Krishna is our protector. He is definitely our protector. Whatever little advancement, yoga shema vahamiham, whatever little bit we've been able to do, he will protect. That confidence should be there. So now it is up to us to increase our love for him. And this is the positive process of devotional service. By dedicating more and more time to hearing and chanting and serving Krishna. And in that way, by increase, we attain Krishna. So that's mentioned here also. That through this process of devotional service, Krishna appeared within the heart like an engraved picture. Just like now that's an engraved picture on the wall, we can see it, it's clear. So also the Supreme Lord appeared within the heart of Bharat Maharaj like an engraved picture. And so after that, he was, of course, always blissful. This is the state of Bhav Bhakti. In the state of Bhav Bhakti, you see the Lord within the heart. In the stage of Prema Bhakti, you see the Lord face to face. This is mentioned. In the stage of Bhava, you get a spurti. A spurti means a vision of the Lord within the heart. I remember saying that Gaurakishore Das Babaji, when he would chant his japa, if he didn't get a spurti of the Lord, he would consider his japa completely useless. So what does that say about us? We become ecstatic if we could keep our head on our shoulders during japa, isn't it? Yeah, we could keep it. If our head just stayed upright, we was like, I did good in japa today. We become completely ecstatic, isn't it? Otherwise, our japa usually we're just like, you know, and then anyone seen from a distance, you know, if you invite anyone to the temple, don't invite them during japa period. Invite them to the Sunday feast where devotees really look blissful. We say this chant and be happy, and we invite them for japa, and, and they become extremely concerned. Should they get some medicines for us in the sun? That if for us is a successful japa period, if we could just keep our heads on our shoulder for at least one round. It don't even have to be the whole 16 rounds. If it was one good round, we feel success. Prabhu, how was your japa? It's really improving. Gaurakishore Das Babaji, if he didn't get a spurti, he would throw his beads and think the whole japa was useless. So, Das Gaurakishore Das Babaji is a little high standard. This is a platform of Bhav Bhakti, you can get a spurti of the Lord, where you're seeing the Lord within your heart like an engraved picture. But this is the goal of a devotee's determination to attain Krishna, because Krishna is voluntarily choosing to appear in that way before his devotee. This we learn from the pastime of Mother Jasoda and Dharmodar Lila. The Dharmodar Lila is a very nice Lila, why we celebrate for the whole month. It's helped us to engrave this message in our heart, that message of that Lila, where Mother Jasoda is trying to bind Krishna. She's wanting to bind Krishna with ropes. But she's trying and trying and trying. She's just sweating. Nothing is happening. She gets one rope, and the rope is the width of 2 fingers too short, like 2 inches too short. And so she calls her gopi friends, bring all your rope. So they all bring all their rope. She ties all that rope together and tries to bind Krishna, and it's still the width of 2 fingers too short. Bewildering. And it wasn't like Krishna was expanding. He was staying the same size, and still it was the width of 2 fingers too short. Very bewildering. So her gopi friends told Mother Jasoda, just give up. You cannot bind him. It's not possible to bind him. But due to her love for Krishna, she said, I want to chastise him. At least I want to see how much rope it's going to take, to try to tie Krishna. So she continued to try, and she was endeavoring very greatly. But she was not able to do it because there was a particular energy of Krishna that was not allowing her to bind Krishna. That Krishna was, Vishwanatharaya Thakur says that energy was Krishna's vibhuti shakti. Right now we're in chapter 10 of Bhagavad Gita, we're hearing about Krishna's vibhuti. So that vibhuti shakti, Krishna's opulent potency, was not allowing Mother Yashoda to tie God, because the vibhuti shakti means God. So you can't bind God with your ropes or mental speculation and so on. So then, but she kept trying to bind Krishna due to her love for Krishna. So finally, seeing that endeavor, Krishna's Kripa Shakti manifested. And Vishwanatharaya Thakur says the Kripa Shakti, which means the mercy potency of God, is the king of all potencies. So that king of all potencies manifested. So just like when a king walks into the room, everyone else has to bow their head, isn't it? When a king walks into the room, everyone bows down. So similarly, when Krishna's Vibhuti Shakti or Kripa Shakti manifested, the other Shaktis had to bow down, and the Kripa Shakti became supreme. So by the combination of Krishna's Kripa Shakti and Mother Yashoda's, the term used by Vishwanatharaya Bhakti Thakur is Bhakta Nishtha, the determination to bind Krishna, then that combination allowed Mother Yashoda to be successful. There's a verse like this. Bhakta Ama Preme Bandi Yache Hidaya Bitare. Mahaprabhu says this thing, that devotees are able to bind Krishna with the ropes of their love and keep them in their hearts. So she was able to do so. Why she was able to do so? Because of Krishna's Kripa Shakti. But when the Krishna Kripa Shakti manifests, when her determination was unflinching, like this, Krishna comes. But it would be very hard to remain determined if we remain absorbed in our anarthas. If we remain absorbed in what we are not received yet, becoming impatient. Why am I not here yet? I've been practicing for a whole 3 years. I should be at the stage of at least Ruchi. You know, I had thought this process was supposed to be easily performed, and you know, and going and speculating that way. Then your lifespan in Krishna consciousness would be very short. On account of dejection and the increase of the mode of ignorance. But by increasing our devotional service to Krishna, day by day, we should analyze at the end of the day. Maybe start the day off asking, what are some major things that I need to work on in terms of my mentality? Particularly the mentality, because it's the mentality, it's the mind which is keeping us from moving forward. The situation is actually 100% conducive. But it's the mind that says, oh, there's that fault is there, this issue is there, so many services are there, you're not able to do this, you're not able to do that. The mind goes on, so it's our mentality that is keeping us from receiving mercy, and not that the mercy is unavailable. So then one can begin his day seeing what are some type of negative mentalities that are keeping me from being determined in my devotional service. You begin your day with some few of those things, not excessive, a few of those things, and then make a strategy. How are you going to overcome that mentality today? Okay, I'm going to do, instead of just doing 1 hour of devotional service, I'm going to do 2 hours. Somehow increase so that my mind doesn't get the better end of my determination. And that way, achieve Krishna in the heart, who is also known as Paramatma and Brahman. That is mentioned here. These are some ideas here. Anyone wants to add anything? Any questions?
Regarding dream, in Bhagavatam it is stated that when one has some contaminated desires, you know, then it is fulfilled through the dreams. When a devotee is having some contaminated desires, it is fulfilled through dreams.
It is fulfilled through the dreams. But you don't want that to keep going on. It is fulfilled through the dreams, and then your whole life goes into that only, fulfilling material desires. Of course, that is Krishna's mercy, so that you don't have to fulfill it practically. But the thing about that is that if that keeps happening, it'll force the mind to think of those things over and over and over again. So we have to increase to Krishna. Yeah.
I was just remembering briefly the way Prabhupada stated it concisely. Make your life perfect and then try to make other people's lives perfect. Thank you.
Okay, anything else? Yeah.
Prabhu, you told that Narad Muni, he got the mercy of Krishna only by the process of hearing and chanting, not totally on the endeavors. The endeavors he practiced hearing and chanting. That was his endeavors, right? And in the case of Yashoda Mata, she bound Krishna by her endeavors. So how can we compare this?
No, she didn't bind Krishna by her endeavors. She was successful because of Krishna's mercy, Krishna's kripa shakti. Her endeavors were not successful. She was trying, they were not successful. But seeing her continued endeavor, unflinching endeavor, then Krishna's mercy manifested. And when Krishna's mercy manifested, then that allowed her to bind Krishna. So that's that example. And the other point I was mentioning, it's from the 7th chapter of the first canto, like verse number 6, I think. Srila Prabhupada says that our endeavors in sadhana bhakti can help us to mitigate material miseries. By our endeavors in sadhana, then the material miseries become mitigated, but that will not help us to attain Krishna alone. So one should not think that by my strong endeavors, I will capture Krishna. Krishna has to give his mercy, otherwise it's not possible to capture him. It's not possible to get him. But by our unflinching endeavors and devotional service, we show Krishna what we want. Right, the term, just like the story of the sparrow, right? The story of the sparrow where her eggs are stolen by the ocean, so she starts trying to dry up the ocean. Now, sparrow's like this big, and what is the ocean? So it is an impossible task. But she so much wanted her child back. That was her, that she really wanted the child back. So she was trying to dry up the ocean. Her determination to get the child back invoked the mercy of Garuda, into which Garuda came and told the ocean, if you don't give back the eggs, then I'm going to myself take up the task. And then Garuda, the ocean feeling afraid, returned the eggs to the mother. So then Prabhupada's message there is God helps those who help themselves. That's how he ends that little purport. God helps those who help themselves. So the idea is that our determination shows us what we want. It shows Krishna what we really want. Sometimes we think, I really want Krishna, right? In a state of utsahamayi or something. We think like that sometimes. But then all it takes is like one little setback, and then we're out of the game. One little setback. Just like in this pastime of Indra and Vitrasura. Indra went through all this trouble to get the thunderbolt weapon. Didichi had to die just so he can get his thunderbolt weapon. You know, he didn't even mind that. The sage just gave up his body so his bones can be used for a thunderbolt weapon. He goes out to the battlefield to fight with Vitrasura. Vitrasura gets one little lick off of him. He's like, all right. He just wants to give up immediately. Vitrasura is a huge monster. You know? He's a devotee, of course, but he was a huge monster. And he was just smashing the demi. He's always giving this example of Vitrasura. He's comparing Vitrasura to the scientists today. And the Christians are like the demigods. They were like this big, and they just come and smash the Christians. And the devotees were like non-entities. No one even knows we're there, you know? Anyway, so Vitrasura is this huge monster. And the thunderbolt weapon can actually kill him. Indra has that thunderbolt weapon. He has the ability to conquer Vitrasura. So he goes out to fight with Vitrasura, and he he doesn't bring out his best weapons, you know, because that, if you can defeat him with a lesser thing, then the pride can really, you get a kick out of that. So he threw like his club, and Vitrasura just grabbed that little toy-like thing and threw it back at Airavata, the elephant, and it sent Airavata flying, and his whole face was broken, and Indra fell off the elephant, and he was just like, all it took was one little hit, you know. It wasn't like it was a great big fight. One little hit and he was out of commission. So Vitrasura, being a devotee, although in a demon body, started preaching to Indra, what is this nonsense? I know I'm supposed to lose. Still not fighting with so much enthusiasm. He started preaching in this way to Indra. So it shows that, so similarly, like that, we, the conditioned souls, we say, I want Krishna. We appear to be wanting Krishna. But all it takes is one little setback, and then we lose all determination to pursue. And then, and once that determination goes, then you see the floodgates of anartas pour in, you know, beginning with fault finding, because you need a really good excuse to leave the association of devotees, right? Because by all common sense measures, there's no question of leaving. It's obvious that this is our best chance, this is our greatest fortune. So, but I've lost determination. So the floodgates headed by fault finding enters into our consciousness. And then, oh, I see so many faults now. Yeah, this is not going to really work out for me. And then we abandon Krishna. And it didn't take much. It's not like it took Maya much. One little setback and we're out of commission. So that means we show Krishna by that we're not really interested in the goal of life. That if that's all it's going to take to block our determination to attain him, then we show Krishna by that we're not as so interested in the goal of life. You'll notice in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna mentions many times about being equipoise in happiness and distress. I many times throughout the whole Gita, in chapter 12, when he's mentioning a list of about 35 qualities, he mentions this point about two or three times, that he's equal in happiness and distress. So this quality is obviously something that's very dear to Krishna, because he says so in the Gita, this is very dear to me. So my contemplation on that, philosophical speculation, why that is very dear, because Krishna can understand that person will be my devotee. Because if you read the Bhagavatam, when you see the lives of devotees, usually you see a lot of distress. Right? We tell people, chant and be happy. Don't give them the Bhagavatam. Chant and be happy, and they start reading the pastimes in the Bhagavatam, and it's like, starting with Queen Kunti, they become concerned, you know? Okay, well, that was just one pastime. I'm sure it's more happiness. And then you get Bhishma Dev, a bed of arrows. That's how he's leaving his body. Now with devotees surrounding him, chanting Hare Krishna, of course, the devotees are surrounding him, and Lord Narayana himself is there, but a bed of arrows. So he's listening. The conditioned soul gets a little bit concerned. Then he scrolls down, and there's the Prahlad Maharaj Leela. So many leelas of devotees seem like they're suffering tremendously. Then the neophyte becomes extremely concerned. Oh, hold on, wait a minute here. You said chant and be happy. What is all of this, these pastimes that I'm reading about? So Krishna wants to see Bhagavad Gita first. Equipoise and happiness and distress, because he knows that person will be his devotee. Because if happiness comes, he will not deviate from Krishna's service. And if distress comes, he will not deviate from Krishna's service, if he's equipoise. But if he's not, when there's happiness, he's not thinking about Krishna because he's doing sense gratification. And when there's distress, he's not thinking about Krishna because he's lamenting, he's grieving, he's thinking about whether or not he should stay in the movement, and so on. So it's like this. We prove to Krishna through our determination to, despite all setbacks, we continue on with our enthusiastic devotional service. And that way we invoke Krishna's kindness upon us, his mercy. And once Krishna's mercy comes, we can get Krishna. Otherwise we cannot. So the two pastimes are actually directly correlated. The two points are directly matched. No, the determination is to hear and chant despite the challenges that come in the form of disturbances.
Hare Krishna Guru, thank you very much. Regarding acquiring the mercy of Krishna, we hear that one must first get the mercy of the spiritual master. At the same time, we hear that the spiritual master, being a follower of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is most merciful, freely giving his mercy everywhere he goes to anyone and everyone who will accept it. So how do we understand that the spiritual master is liberally, very liberally giving mercy?
Easy. He comes and gives so many classes. What is the difficulty? He's answering our mails. He's giving classes. He's giving us association of devotees. He's giving us a temple to live in, prasadam to eat every day, no bills to pay if you're a brahmachari. And probably speaking, if you're a grihasta living around a temple, you hardly have to do anything either. What is the difficulty to understand that he's giving mercy liberally?
Yeah, no, that is not my doubt. My doubt is how to receive. How can
you have to become exclusive. You have to take shelter of devotional service of Krishna exclusively. You know, guru, the process. I just read this the other day in Brihadbhagavatamrita, that although Krishna gives his mercy liberally, this is the exact verse that was mentioned, until the practitioner takes full shelter of bhakti, he's not able to receive that mercy so effectively. That was the verse that was described in this way. So our shelter, we oftentimes think that we are taking shelter of bhakti, or Krishna, or guru, and so on. But when there's disturbances, that time you really see where your shelter-taking propensity lies, isn't it? When things are going good, it's easy to think that we're taking full shelter of Krishna, especially with our practices, especially if you're a brahmachari, it may even appear that way. But I've noticed with devotees that, you know, that when there's disturbances, particularly disturbances in their practices, then they don't take shelter of Krishna, actually. They usually tend to take shelter of their mental speculation and allow that to be the all-important factor. Of course, we don't want to do that, but we do that. So therefore, it is that tendency to take shelter of karma and gyan, mental speculation or sense gratification, that makes us ineffective in receiving all the liberal mercy that's coming our direction. That tendency to take shelter of something that's not Krishna is like a hole in the heart. This analogy is actually given by Guru Govinda Maharaj. There are holes in the heart. So a lot of mercy can be coming in, like a, what do you call it? A sieve? Or a colander. Colander where you wash the vegetable. So the spiritual master pouring the mercy, and this is coming out, seeping through all the holes of our narjas and so on. So the spiritual master pouring that big sugar canister of mercy is coming, and everything coming out through the colander. And then you say, spiritual, you're not giving anything. Spiritual master, like, I gave a hole, because there's so many holes in the heart. And those holes in the heart are due to our shelter-taking propensity being something that's not Krishna, particularly karma and gyan. We hear those language, karma and gyan, but it means sense gratification and mental speculation. And devotees who practice in the temple, the sense gratification is less. In a lot of ways, in terms of a lot of practical ways. You can't go and watch television and so on. But the mental speculation becomes a very prominent thing in the ashram. Because we don't have so much sense gratification to take shelter of in the ashram. So then devotees get into their minds, isn't it? The mind. And many times you can just see devotees just like, I mean, now I'm not making fun. This is just a hard reality of ashram life is tough in this sense. It's hard, you know. Because usually in the material world, when there's distress, they can just go to the movies or something. They fill themselves up with many distracting things in order to numb them to the reality of the situation. Whereas in the ashram, we don't have so many things that we can do. There's prasadam. You know, you can eat and so on. So what are we taking shelter of? Because our shelter is not exclusive, our ability to receive mercy is less. That's what Brihadbhagavatamrita is mentioning in this way. Does that, you want to follow up on that?
The karma seems quite obvious, easy to identify. Mental speculation seems a little bit less easy to defend against. What would you recommend as far as
hearing chanting about Krishna?
Even sometimes I'm trying to do that and I'm speculating.
Why?
Because my mind is not so controlled.
Okay, go and book distribution.
Okay.
Actually, kirtan preaching is a very effective way to capture the mind. Because when you have to preach, you have to think about how you're going to explain Krishna nicely to the individual that you're speaking to. So you notice that when after preaching, you feel ecstatic usually. You know, just like you were speaking to one Judy that you, at Northwestern, it was one Judy was there. He liked Judy very much. And he admitted why he liked Judy yesterday. Because I was like, why are you so attached to Judy? You know, getting street sangha? It's not very good. And he admitted because when he was speaking about Krishna directly, she was listening to him. I said, oh, okay, that makes sense, because none of us do that. So then you start speaking, we all say, Hare Krishna Prabhu, I have to go do some service or something. So Judy was hearing you very nicely, so you got to speak very nicely about Krishna, and you felt ecstatic after that. So much so that if we made any criticism of Judy, he says, what is this nonsense? And I said, why are you so defensive of Judy? Did he tell yesterday? Because she was listening. So when you get to speak about Krishna, then the mind is easily captured. So more so than when you're reading, where you read one sentence and you speculate for the next 20 minutes about something unrelated. And then you go back to the next sentence. Or sometimes you're reading the same page for 1 hour. You know, it's in between sleeping and daydreaming, and sleeping and speculating, and you don't get to the even one purport, you know. Even one purport, you don't make it through. And then an hour and a half later, you're like, okay, let me just sleep. And then you dream about something nonsense, and then you wake up and you go downstairs and eat something. And then there's the evening program, and then you fall asleep in the evening program, and you feel totally dejected, and you just sleep at 8 o'clock and wake up at 4 o'clock, and, you know, and then you start thinking about sex life. Yeah, this is an actual reality. This happens like this. It's a sad reality. So if you can't control the mind, maybe you should try speaking about Krishna more. This speaking about Krishna is going to save us. Therefore, Prabhupada emphasized preaching. A lot of like other Gaudiya traditions, they emphasize more private practice because historically, traditionally, it kind of went like that, where it was more of a private affair. Even though Mahaprabhu preached so much, but after the Goswamis, historically it came like a bhajan was like the more prominent feature of our Sampradaya scene. Until Bhaktivinoda Thakur and then Srila Prabhupada came for preaching and so on. So this speaking about Krishna will save us. Doing kirtan in the streets, Harinam Sankirtan, and speaking about Krishna, that's going to save us from our minds. Otherwise it's very hard to control the mind. Even those who are very advanced have trouble controlling the mind. That's what we just heard in chapter 6. So if you're having trouble, because you spend a lot of time in the temple, aside from your Christian lunch, which is going to end now, and you do a lot of writing and so on, I know you keep yourself engaged as much as you can, but speaking about Krishna is more practical for controlling the mind and saving it from mental speculation. So devotees should come out together and speak about Krishna together. And we should speak about Krishna to each other. You know, I don't do the best job, but you see how I'm like always on the phone, conference call, writing mail, like this. Because that's how I was able to survive so many years alone in the ashram. I was able to speak about Krishna. I would go to the university campuses, and I would spend about 10 to 12 hours every day speaking about Krishna, or chanting Krishna's holy name, but mostly speaking about Krishna. And that way it's easy to control the mind. So this speaking about Krishna will save us. The Satyatam Kirtanyantamam. Why Krishna says that? Because it's the only hope. Now that Krishna's like, we get up, why 24 hours? Not 20, no, he's saying because it's the only hope. You constantly speak about me, then you can be rescued. Otherwise, your mind will capture.
Like that.
Okay, thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Pramanandi Hari Bol.